Chapter 3 Tyndall flew through his afternoon session, thanks to his newfound, perfect recall of formulas mathematical, magical, and alchemical. It was amazing how easy things became when you could always see the sacred periodic table with perfect accuracy. Since he completed the assessment so quickly, most of his day was free, so afterward he celebrated with a double-length workout. He was eager to push himself on the cold, dreary day, using muscles that felt cramped after what had seemed like weeks of reading. Much to his pleasure, Astasia came out to watch him and flirt with him as he sparred, along with a half-dozen other students. Much to his annoyance, so did Rondal. He stuck to Astasia's side while Tyndall and the guardsmen went through drills and sparred together. Much to Tyndall's annoyance, Rondal seemed to have understood enough of the laws of love so that Astasia was giggling at his jokes by the time Rain called an end to the practice. That was fine with Tyndall. Rondal had called out criticisms of his style during the entire bout, and he hadn't been kind about it. The small crowd broke up. Astasia did not stay to speak to him. Rondal stayed, though.
Ishi's tits! Why did you have to linger like an oozing sore?
Tyndall asked his fellow apprentice, crossly, as he tossed his wooden sword carelessly in the direction of the rack after the robust session. He had waited until after the pretty alchemy student had left to attend her afternoon lecture in the company of two other girls, one of them Lyndra. One of the boys he'd dueled brought him a tankard of water from the well while he stripped off his practice armor.
"What do you mean?"
Rondal asked, innocently, from behind the fence. "I thought you'd appreciate the support."
"What support? You criticized virtually everything I did," Tyndall said angrily, after taking another drink. "You kept talking about my sloppy footwork, which was flawless, by the way, when meanwhile you can't draw a blade without tripping over your feet. I'm not the one trying to show off for the girls," Rondal pointed out. "Besides, I had to find something to talk about. You were handy," he reasoned.
It was a bullshit answer. They both knew it. Still, Rondal looked at him stubbornly.
"You were supposed to be focusing on Lyndra," Tyndall reminded through clenched teeth.
"I'm not interested in Lyndra," Rondal said flatly. "I'm interested in Astasia, and you told me to practice on Astasia, so I did."
He folded his arms defiantly.
"And what was all that giggling about?
What did you say to her?" he demanded.
"Why?"
Rondal challenged. "Afraid I'd mention your predilection for maiden goats? Or just worried about your sloppy footwork?"
"She's an alchemist," Tyndall said, his nostrils flaring.
"You couldn't find any matter or energy sitting around to discuss?"
"I just wanted to talk to her," Rondal said defensively.
"She doesn't like you like that," Tyndall shot back angrily.
Wasn't that clear to Ron? It was clear to him. Astasia didn't notice the junior apprentice romantically, despite what Rondal desired. He was just making a fool of himself by continuing to try. How could a boy so smart be so stupid about something so basic?
"Maybe she would if you didn't eclipse everything I do," Rondal shouted back,
and changed direction before Tyndall could think of a witty retort. "I'm going to the library to study," he snapped. "Perhaps you've heard of it?" He stomped off. Feeling angry, irritated, and almost as tired as he'd been when he'd started, Tyndall decided against another night in the Manciple's library, feeding his brain on arcane matters. He considered going to find something to eat. It was a few hours until dinner, but you could always scrounge something if you knew which kitchen drudges to speak to, but his stomach was upset after the fight. In fact, he was exhausted. He didn't know if it was Rondal's asinine behavior, the long hours of study, or the accumulated effects of using magic so frequently. But instead of feeling refreshed after his sparring, he felt lethargic. He could barely drag himself across the campus back to the North Tower, and the 7 flights of stairs to his room were brutal. He was tired, beyond tired. The blue magic spells he was using may not have tapped his physical condition, but they drained his mental energy faster than a 3-mile run. He stumbled to his room barely conscious, and then fell into bed without even taking off his boots. He was asleep before his head hit the pillow, the sun still in the sky. If he sought peace in slumber, he sought in vain. His dreams were anxious and vivid, filled with danger and sorrow, terror and despair, the product of too much magic and too little sleep.
In the midst of chaotic dreams, featuring Astasia, Rondol, and Master Menelin, with appearances by Lady Pentandra, Lady Alia, a cast of his friends in Sevendor, and a host of ugly goblins, Tyndall restlessly endured his long, restless nap. Eventually, his busy mind quieted, but not before his own subconscious featured some distressing scenes to torment him. But he did not wake. Later in the night, he wasn't certain how long, Tyndall's sleep was interrupted by a sudden sharp, stabbing pain in his midsection. He thought it was a cramp, the moment he opened his eyes, but then he realized that someone was poking him in the abdomen with something hard. He felt a flood of energy, magical energy, pass through him. Confused, he tried to get up, but he couldn't move. Instantly terrified, he tried to move his arms and legs in the darkness, to no avail. Whatever had poked his stomach had paralyzed him, he realized. He could not move a muscle beyond his eyelids. All of his voluntary muscles were dead to his control. Only his eyes could move. It was not a complicated spell, the part of his mind that wasn't panicking told him. There were 5 or 6 methods of casting it, and it was used for everything from war magic to surgery. He took some solace that it was likely not permanent. His breathing wasn't affected, nor his heartbeat. But why would anyone do it? For one brief instant, he thought it was Rondol, vengefully taking action in his failing suit for Astasia. He discarded the thought almost immediately. This was not Rondol's style. So who? And why? He felt a shadow loom over him in the darkness, and with sudden, frustrated horror, he realized what was happening. Someone was stealing his witchstone. It was almost unthinkable. That shard of Irionite had been around his neck or on his person constantly since he'd received it 2 years ago. Having anyone else handle it felt like the deepest violation. To have them handle it against his will was appalling. He struggled in vain against the spell while his assailant searched around his neck for the bag. Then he relaxed and calmed himself. He did not have much time, he knew. His muscles may have been restrained by magic, but his mind was not. Almost subconsciously, he tapped into the power of his stone and cast the perception-altering spell he'd employed so frequently of late. Suddenly, his assailant slowed down significantly in front of him. Thinking furiously, Tyndall tried to remember other spells he could do silently, without involving his body in their casting or his mouth with a mnemonic. Most of the most useful spells in this situation were useless, as they had mnemonic components that had to be vocalized, for safety reasons. But there were a few. The first thing he did was cast a mage light over his bed. He'd cast them so often that it took little more than a thought. The cat's eye spell required a word, but mage lights were easy. The blue light was small, no larger than an egg, but he made it as brilliant as possible to expose, and possibly startle, his attacker. Unfortunately, whomever the thief who had the temerity to steal his stone also had the foresight to mask his face for the occasion. More, a haze of indistinct perception hovered around the thief like a cloud of blurred vision, an obfuscation spell. Whoever they were, Tyndall realized as he studied them, they were schooled in some shadow magic. Trying to determine the shape of their face, the feeling of their shroud, even their height, was almost impossible under the spell, and he did not know enough shadow magic to cast a counterspell. He barely knew any. As the indistinct thief's fingers slowly searched his person, Tyndall realized there was one more thing he could do before the thief found what he was looking for. A marker spell. He'd done them plenty of times before, of course, but usually they were done on an object, not a person, like the one he'd done on the saddle of those sensors in Tallery. The thief's obscuring field kept him from casting it directly on him or her, which kept him from hooking the spell on him or her, but he did note the thief was wearing cunningly crafted leather gloves that were not thus obscured. Tyndall extended his awareness, chose the proper rune, and affixed a hook on the right-hand glove, just as it found the bag with his witchstone and triumphantly tore it off his paralyzed neck. The perception spell turned the quick theft into a long, agonizing ordeal to live through, but Tyndall tried to use his time wisely. He noted, for instance, that while the direct image of the thief was obscured by shadow magic, he or she hadn't thought to alter their actual shadow. And in the light of the mage light, The thief's shadow stretched across the wall. Tyndall made a mental note of how long it extended and marked the spot in his mind. Then his perception spell came down, as did his other spells. His Irionite shard had been taken from his control as the thief slowly slid the silken pouch into a small stone box. He could feel his link with it dim as it shut, and the thief moved further away from him. Suddenly, everything was moving fast again. As the thief bolted for the open window, Tyndall tried one last-ditch maneuver. He used the continued, if fading, proximity of the Witchstone for one last spell, a mind-to-mind link with the only other high mage in town, Rondon.
"What?"
the other apprentice asked, annoyed.
"Want to shout at me some more? Too bad, I'm studying."
"I don't want to shout at you, idiot. Someone is stealing my Witchstone."
"What?"
repeated Rondell.
"You mean—"
"I mean someone crept into our room and threw a paralyzing spell on me while I was asleep, then took my stone from around my neck. Right now, they are fleeing from the North Tower over the rooftop. I'm still paralyzed."
"I'm on my way," Rondell said.
From the way he said it, Tyndall knew the other boy was already in motion. That didn't leave him a lot to do. In fact, that left him with exactly nothing to do. Once his link with his stone was gone, so was his ability to speak mind to mind. Even his mage light flickered as its power faded. In vain he tried to fuel it with what power he could generate on his own, but he had become so accustomed to using Irionite that he was unable to keep it alight for more than a few moments. Then darkness. Darkness and paralyzation were insidious foes in his mind. An indeterminable amount of time later, the door to his room was thrown open, and a mage light blazed again. This time it was Rondell's, and out of the corner of his eye, he could see his fellow knight had managed to arm himself with a sword from somewhere. Rondell rushed over, dropping the sword with a clatter as he began to conjure the beginning of a counterspell.
"Who the hell did you piss off?"
Rondell demanded angrily, as his spell began to sap the strength of the paralysis spell. It was several moments before Tyndall could make his mouth move properly again, but he tried his best to answer.
"Why? Think me. Because you piss everyone off, eventually,"
reasoned Rondell. "That's the only reason why I can think that someone might steal your stone." Tyndall looked at him, rolling his eyes. While that might be true, it was hardly the time or place to bring it up. Not when there were better motivations close at hand. He hated to waste energy on pointing out the obvious, but he felt compelled.
"Greed?"
he managed. He could feel tingling in his fingers and toes.
"Well, yes, I suppose we are, both walking around with a barony's ransom around our neck,"
conceded Rondell. "But why you and not me?"
"Opportunity,"
struggled Tyndall.
"Right," agreed Rondell. "But never mind. We can deal with that later. Let me go alert the hall steward while you recover."
Before Tyndall could voice an objection, Rondell was gone. While Rondell was away, Tyndall could feel the spell ebb and feeling rush back into his body, from his core out to his extremities. Soon he was able to move his limbs and speak more clearly. By the time Rondell returned with the hall steward, an older student already in his nightdress, a panicked look in his eye, Tyndall was sitting upright. At least the paralysis wasn't more severe, he thought, though it was a minor comfort in the face of losing his Irionite. But it was a comfort. He couldn't imagine spending any length of time like that and not going mad.
"A theft? In the North Tower?"
the steward was saying in disbelief.
"Never in all the years. I'm not blaming you,"
Rondell said quickly, "or faulting your security. I just need your help.
Care for him while I try to track the thief," he ordered.
He gave one more assessing look at Tyndall, apparently decided he would be fine, and went out the window after the thief. Tyndall's stomach leapt as he watched, anticipating disaster. While not precisely clumsy, Rondell was far from the sturdiest when it came to footwork in the yard, and the centuries-old slate roof outside of their rooms was a treacherous landscape of broken ankles awaiting their debut.
"Idiot,"
Tyndall thought to himself. He would have told him that mind to mind, had he his stone. He could still almost feel it, but the sensation and awareness was already gone. Thankfully, so was his paralysis. He could stand now, and his speech was back completely. He needed it to calm the senior student who was supposed to take care of him. The hall steward was beside himself with emotion. The two young knights magi were the most important guests his hall had had during his tenure, and the man was certain this incident would end his career. Tyndall tried to soothe him, as he felt the feeling come completely back to his limbs and joints, and finally persuaded him that he was sufficiently recovered that the man could summon the guard without his guest keeling over. When he was gone, Tyndall examined the room as carefully as he could. Summoning mage sight was hard as it had been before he'd gotten his witchstone. He found himself calling upon basic spell elements that he'd been able to do automatically just this morning, and while there was a thrill of success when the spell allowed him to see the traceries of magic in the room, the effort had also demonstrated to him just how diminished in potency he was. The thief had come in through the window he'd left by, Tyndall could tell at once. There were remnants of a silence spell that had blocked the noise of the shutter's opening. That suggested the thief had come in already garbed in shadow magic. There was no signature associated with the spell work, or at least none that Tyndall could see, but then he wasn't a thaumaturge. There was also no sign of a paralysis spell being cast. That concerned him, as any spell will leave minute traces of arcane energy when it was cast, until he realized that the effect must have come from an artifact, not a living mage. A wand or other device had arrested his muscles. He was examining the wall, where he'd mentally noted the height of the shadow, when Rundle came back in through the window, a tragic look on his face. "I followed his trail across the roof," he explained apologetically, "but then he obscured his route and disappeared into the shadows between the towers. I think he slid down a rope or climbed down into the courtyard. I couldn't even see him with mage sight," he lamented. "He was cloaked, I think," Tyndall said slowly. "Shadow magic. I've never seen it before, but I've heard of it. Whoever it was like my eyes couldn't focus on them at all."
"Shadow magic? Are you sure?"
Rundle asked, alarmed.
"It had to be,"
Tyndall insisted.
"Who do you know who does shadow magic?"
"No one," Rundle admitted. "I suppose spies and thieves and assassins would use it," he reasoned.
"Exactly,"
Tyndall agreed.
"Lady Isili, one of Princess Raldine's ladies-in-waiting, is a shadow mage," he revealed.
"I met her a few times at Timberwatch."
"I remember her,"
Rundle nodded. "The night we got knighted.
Do you think she—"
"No," Tyndall dismissed.
"She was given a witchstone."
"She was?" Rundle asked, surprised.
"Yes, she was.
I don't think Master Min was happy about it, but it was part of the deal he cobbled together to get the army formed in Wilderhall. But I haven't seen her since. Besides, she was an adept. Whoever did this was sloppy. An amateur. An amateur who doesn't already have a witchstone," he reasoned.
"How do you figure?"
"I'm not disputing," he added when he saw Tyndall's face. "I just want to hear your reasoning."
"That's fair,"
Tyndall sighed. "Whoever stole my stone didn't have their own, because they used a wand to paralyze me. If they had their own stone, they could have just cast the spell."
"It would have left a signature,"
Rundle pointed out. "Not necessarily with shadow magic," Tyndall said. "But even so, they were sloppy. They obscured their appearance magically, but they did not obscure their shadow. I was able to cast a mage light, about all I could do. But when I did, the thief's shadow went up to here," he said, indicating a spot on the stone wall.
"Here,
cast a light over the bed, excised, about 6 candles worth," he requested. Rundle did so in a moment.
"Now,"
Tyndall continued, standing where his assailant had stood, next to the bed, "if he was standing here, and that light, bring it down a bit lower, there, that light cast the shadow over there, which makes the thief no taller than 5 feet and a half, he said.
"That's a short thief,"
Rundle said sagely.
"And that's—" "Tyndall, you just did math. Geometry, even."
"Correctly." The other apprentice looked impressed.
"Thanks. I've been reading,"
he dismissed crossly. "It also rules out an awful lot of suspects," Tyndall pointed out. "Now, if I can manage to cast the recall spell, maybe I can track the trace I placed on his gloves."
"Wait, you cast a trace spell on him? Why didn't you say so?"
"I cast it on his gloves. It wasn't subtle. If he's got a brain in his head and even a modicum of training,
He would have recognized it and discarded them. But perhaps we have a stupid thief. Can you lend me some power? Otherwise this might take a while, he said apologetically.
What? Oh, sure,
Rondal said, realizing how weakened Tyndall was without his stone. He closed his eyes and quickly created two karbas full of power and an apis to transfer it. The surge of power was intoxicating after being bereft of his stone even for a short time. He took a moment to enjoy it before putting it to use. The tracking spell worked, he was gratified to see, and in a moment he had the distance and proximate direction of the gloves. They're about 600 feet that way, he decided, pointing. What's over there?
The courtyard, the east tower, the kitchens, the stable, quite a lot, actually,
Rondal said apologetically. 600 feet? That would put it in the courtyard, he said excitedly. They both rose and bolted at once, Tyndall stumbling a bit as his legs tried to get used to their role again. The boys raced outside, following the magical trail, following the line into a tiny garden near the edge of the courtyard.
That planter thing,
Rondal indicated, pointing to one of the raised beds that littered the campus. They both fell to searching it at once, until they found the gloves, along with a mottled black cloak, an empty glass vial, and a discarded wand.
He did abandon them,
Tyndall said, dismayed.
Crap!
He was sloppy, remember? Rondal pointed out, but not stupid. Let me check them out thaumaturgically.
Don't touch them,
he cautioned. I don't want to confuse your signatures.
You can do thaumaturgy, practically.
Thanks, I've been reading. I know enough to know where to start, admitted Rondal. Beyond that,
well, let me see what I can see, he said, getting on his knees in front of the discarded equipment.
He closed his eyes, and Tyndall experienced a tinge of resentment as the other apprentice began casting. While he waited, Tyndall explained the theft to Ancient Galdan, who arrived soon after upon the summons of the steward, and then again to Headmaster Alwyn. Both looked profoundly disturbed and upset by the matter, with Master Minolan suddenly so important in the profession. A theft of a witchstone from his oldest apprentice reflected very poorly on the school, and they knew it. Of course, it reflected poorly on him, too. He was happy for them not to point that out, to him or his master. The guards, a few more masters, and even a few students came out of their rooms and out into the courtyard to investigate the small commotion. Soon a crowd gathered around Rondal, who was still deep in his spellcraft. Tyndall did his best to shoo away anyone he could, but there were a few of such rank that his dismissal would not do. But he didn't mention the theft specifically, unless he had to. He confided only in faculty, knowing he took a risk in doing so. They were all appropriately shocked.
Whoever it was, Tyndall explained to them, they were between 5'3" and 5'5", talented but unaugmented by Irionite.
Until now, he added sourly.
That describes about 100 different people in the school,
Galdan said, disturbed. He was fully dressed, unlike most of the others gathered. Likely he slept in those clothes, as many guardsmen did. Astasia, dressed in her night clothes but with her mantle over them against the chill of the night and the season, was among those who would not disperse. She could tell there was something wrong, and with a look of concern, she asked him. Tyndall found himself telling her everything, almost guiltily. He drank in her looks of sympathy like a thirsty man in the desert. His witchstone was lost. What would he tell his master?
Oh, Tyndall, she sighed sadly. I can't believe that would happen. Not here, not to you. Well, whoever did it, they must be mad.
No, they're not, Tyndall decided. They're very, very smart. Smart enough to track me and my movements, get me alone, wait until I was asleep, make sure Rondal wasn't around, slip into my room through the window.
I could try to do a thaumaturgical essay, she offered, helpfully. I might be able to pick up a signature.
Rondal's already working on it. Tyndall nodded toward his fellow, whose brow was knit with concentration as he tracked the stone.
Besides, how tall are you?
Astasia looked confused at first, and then upset, and then angry.
What? Are you accusing me?
I'm not accusing anyone, Tyndall said easily. I'm just asking for your height.
and I don't want anyone looking at that stuff until Rondel does. Her nostrils flared.
You think you can't trust me?
I know I can trust him, Tyndall said, throwing his thumb toward the other apprentice. He might be a... I know I can trust him. Everyone else? Well, I just met you, good folk, he said apologetically.
I understand, lad,
Master Alwyn said, shaking his head. Alwyn leaned heavily on his staff. He did not look offended. He looked distraught.
I don't, Astasia said, offended. Do you take me for a thief?
Don't worry,
Rondel said, opening his eyes suddenly. It wasn't her.
How do you know?
Asked Tyndall excitedly. Did you get the thief's signature?
No,
groaned Rondel, standing up and brushing the cold dirt of the courtyard off his butt. They weren't that sloppy, unfortunately, but I did establish a few things. For instance, the thief was male. He was also younger, he said, which seemed to relieve the shorter masters in the crowd. Someone else can check behind me if they like, see if they can find anything else out about him. There were several volunteers, and the headmaster, Alwyn, chose Master Seacole to do the tracing. A few minutes later, he had to concur with Rondel, and commended the boy on his thorough job.
Younger, male, and magically gifted,
Ancient Galdan repeated.
That narrows the suspects down to, say, 60, 70.
That's assuming that he is a student,
Astasia said darkly. Who knows what enemies these two have attracted?
This wasn't done because of hate, Tyndall pointed out. Otherwise my throat would be slit. This was a thief, not an assassin. This was done out of greed. Greed for power.
Then who is that greedy for power? Asked Rondel.
That could be anyone here,
Master Seacole admitted. Ambition for power is always a hazard for a mage. I, myself, am not above it, he admitted.
Why can't you scry for it?
Asked Astasia. Irianite is magically expressive. I would think it would show up.
It would,
Rondel agreed. I tried. The thief used some sort of shadow magic spell to conceal it soon after he stole it. Otherwise, it would have. It can be done, he added. It's not too complicated. The Gavani shamans try to mask themselves from our scrying that way.
Then how do we find it? Assuming the thief isn't halfway upriver by now?
Master Trundell asked.
Or riding for his life over the horizon.
Sir Tyndall, Master Alwyn said doubtfully, while I understand the magnitude of this incident, do you not think it better if older and wiser heads were to conduct an investigation?
With respect, Headmaster,
Rondel said formally, as this involves Irianite, which is held under oath to the spellmonger, and since we are unsure of exactly who is involved, my colleague and I would prefer to run the investigation. I still have my Witchstone, and that will be of immense benefit in finding the first, perhaps even instrumental.
Master, the young ones seem to have this in hand,
Ancient Galdan said, respectfully.
I'll work with them and ensure they don't go too far astray.
But
where exactly would you start?
The old wizard looked thoughtful.
In truth, I have no liking for this theft. Irianite is too volatile and too powerful to be in sinister hands.
Just how powerful is it?
Asked Astasia, looking alarmed. I destroyed a castle with it last summer, Tyndall said.
It was a small castle,
Rondel said apologetically.
I helped.
My point is, Headmaster, that I don't think that you and your staff are quite equipped to handle this. Without Irianite, and without a better idea of who the thief is, you'll be as much in the dark as a non-mage, I'm afraid.
I see your point, lad,
the old wizard said. Of course we'll help in any way we can, but we will keep you apprised of our investigation, Headmaster, Rondel assured him. For now, simply keep the theft quiet, please. If we need specific assistance, we'll request it.
So how are you planning to find it?
Galdan asked, curious. Tyndall suppressed a groan.
Wasn't that obvious?
We can find it if we play to our strengths,
Tyndall said instantly. If we have the most advanced... Tyndall stopped as his stomach started to churn. Before he could say another word, he vomited profusely into the shrubbery. Everyone else stepped back quickly.
Sorry, he moaned when he was finished. That must have been an after effect of the paralysis spell.
Astasia looked at him, disgusted, and he suddenly felt ashamed of losing control like that. Vomiting in front of girls you liked was almost never a good idea.
No, it's not. That smell, she said, wrinkling her nose. I know that smell. Bardane.
Who?
Not who. What?
She corrected. Bardane is a common hypnotic sedative, made from a particular kind of sea kelp. It's odourless, colourless, and tasteless, until it hits your stomach, that is, when it converts into other chemicals. Some of them smell like green apples, of which your vomit, she said distastefully, indicating the disgusting puddle, reeks. Vomiting later is also common, as your stomach rejects the toxin. Someone poisoned you, Tyndall, she declared angrily. That's how they snuck into your room so easily. They wanted you dead asleep for the theft. Then they paralyzed you to be sure.
Who could have poisoned me? He asked, confused.
Bardane is subtle. It could have happened any time in the previous 6-7 hours, agreed Master Seacole.
Excellent identification, young lady. Astasia beamed and blushed at the praise at the same time.
I ate in the dining hall at lunch, Tyndall recalled, but I served myself from the common table, just like everyone else. I missed dinner, slept through it.
It wouldn't have to be dinner, she decided. Mixed with some other compounds, Bardane can even be absorbed through the skin. Physicians often administer it in water or broth. But someone had to have done it. She picked up the glass vial the thief had left behind gingerly, using a handkerchief to protect her fingers.
With your permission, Headmaster, I'd like to investigate to confirm.
As long as someone you trust verifies her work, Headmaster, we have no objection, Rondell said quickly.
No offence, m'lady, but none taken,
she dismissed.
I'd be mistrustful, too, after something like this, with something that powerful. That's the sort of thing that inspires people to do, well, anything.
I'm sure your master is not going to be pleased, she said, looking at Tyndall sympathetically. Tyndall did not look forward to that conversation.
That is likely the biggest understatement of your life, Tyndall said, shaking his head quietly in misery. Master Min will think of something particularly nasty to torment me with in punishment.
That was probably an overstatement. It hadn't truly been his fault. But would his master see it that way?
We'll find it, Rondell assured him, before we have to report it to Master Min. It can't have gone far. No one was moving within 2 miles of the campus, and I'll know if anyone does. So let's go over what we know. We have a 5'5" male with talent, a knowledge of shadow magic, and a knowledge of herbalism, Rondell said, ticking off the clues. How many students fit that description?
Herbalism is a common class, a prerequisite for most advanced alchemy classes, Astasia said, and just about anyone could look up Bardane. It's not hard to find, this close to the coast. Surgeons use it when they operate, sometimes.
But shadow magic, Seacole said, shaking his head,
that's a different story. No one teaches shadow magic. Anywhere.
Anywhere legitimate, Galdon reminded him.
It's an obscure discipline, Alwyn agreed in his creaky old voice. Hardly respectable for all of its utility, to some folk. If shadow magic is taught these days, it is usually taught secretly. Someone who has a secret patron, perhaps, or someone who learned it within their family. Some families have their own grimoires, he reminded them. Secret spells they only pass down from generation to generation.
Tyndall recalled that Lady Pentandra had a store of those herself, special spells that had been proscribed by the bans, but that she had learned from her father. Master Min had a few books he wouldn't let anyone else look in. Secrecy was the prerogative of the mage.
Then whoever the thief was comes from a magical family, he reasoned. How many does that narrow your list down to, ancient Galen?
He watched the man figure in his head.
20. No, 19. Maybe 18, depending on whether or not.
So 20,
Rondell repeated. 20 suspects. Progress. That's not too many to question.
If they know shadow magic, they will likely be able to conceal themselves from detection, even in an interrogation, Master Seacole observed.
But they aren't adept at shadow magic, Rondell pointed out.
or Tyndall would never have guessed their height as he did. Someone who has an imperfect understanding of the discipline might be vulnerable, if we're subtle enough. Or they might just get nervous enough to reveal themselves under pressure, Tyndall agreed. He began to walk back to his room, resolutely. Where are you going? Seacole called after him. To get my mage blade, Slasher, Tyndall growled. It's time to play to my strengths. The boys stayed up all night, working with Galdon, Astasia, and Master Seacole to manage the crisis. Rondal suggested that they spread the rumour that someone had tried to steal Tyndall's mage blade as a prank. That was plausible enough. Pranks at magical academies were legendary. Tyndall displaying the allegedly stolen and recovered blade was enough to put an end to the rumour. No one outside of the investigation knew the true scope of the crime. If the thief didn't remember stealing the stone, then it was best not to alert him prematurely. They came up with the best possible plan under the circumstances. The next morning at dawn, 20 boys were summoned to the rarely used Enchanter's Hall for special examination. Rondal thought that this would make the thief suspicious, but he was assured by Master Seacole that such sudden and unexpected tests were a common thing at Inarion. Students could be summoned for all sorts of reasons, and often were gathered together without being told why, to avoid any chance of impropriety. The 20 boys who milled around the old hall, the fire smouldering in the fireplace, were a little nervous but mostly bored. Tyndall could see from the convenient peephole in the next room. The ones who were supposed to be in class seemed happy to have been called away, while the ones who were out of class were grumbling about disturbing their sleep. "I was up all night studying thaumaturgic theory," complained Caffin of Gaia, tiredly, to no one in particular, while they were waiting. "I have a test this afternoon. Making me stay awake on my morning off is cruel." "You think you have it bad?" moaned another boy. "Taris of Darthendal," Master Seacole whispered to Tyndall as he watched through the peephole. "You're a good student. You'll do fine. I've got a test in practical spellcraft this morning I'm missing, and I still haven't read the last third of the text. Now I'm going to have to skip lunch to make it up." "You should have prepared more, then," taunted another one, a bookish lad who reminded Tyndall more of Rondal than anyone else. Jesden of somewhere. "That test has been on the calendar for weeks." "I just want to know why we're here," complained another. "Bandran of Gars," Seacole supplied, though Tyndall remembered the boy. "We all know why we're here," Darris of Holden's Mead said gravely. "Someone was clearly caught cheating. I trust each of you will exercise due restraint," he added warningly. "We don't know why we're here," Caffin said in disgust. There was a murmur of agreement. "If it was cheating, then I'm not even in the same level classes as most of you," he pointed out. "I think we're getting drafted," Jesden said, suddenly terrified. "There's that war, and those two war magi." "Knights magi," Caffin said earnestly, "and don't you forget it." Tyndall was surprised to hear such a defense coming from a boy he'd beaten so soundly. Maybe these academic magi weren't so bad after all. "We could be getting conscripted," Darris agreed, his eyes darting back and forth in a calculating manner. "I heard the Knights Magi were headed to Raelan Kor after this. They might be recruiting." "Oh, shit," moaned Jesden. "Oh, relax," Bandran of Gars insisted, leaning back and closing his eyes. "Just appreciate the fact you're not in class right now."
"That just means more reading later," someone else moaned.
"What a bunch of whiny little girls," Tyndall whispered to Master Seacole in amused disgust. "Do you recognize any of them?" the master asked. "Well, yes. I've seen most of them around campus. But can I tell who did it by looking at them?" "No. He wore gloves and a mask. He didn't speak. He was in shadow." "Did any of them seem suspiciously guilty?" offered Seacole.
"No," shrugged Tyndall. "But they're in their teens. You don't feel guilty about anything in your teens," he grinned sheepishly.
Master Seacole rolled his eyes. "Very well," he whispered. "I had hoped to spot the miscreant before we addressed them, but that young man gave me an idea." A few moments later, Seacole and Tyndall walked into the room, each of them holding a roll of parchment. Tyndall did his best to appear his normal self. He liked this idea.
"Gentlemen," he began,
As you are aware, there is a war on. The king has requested that the arcane orders identify young, talented magi still in academy for potential military training. There were gasps and oaths from around the room. To this end, Tyndall continued pleasantly, we'd like you to write down in your own words what kind of service you could foresee yourselves doing, based on your own assessment of your talents and skills.
Are we getting graded on this? Moaned Caffin.
Oh, she's tits. Are we going tonight?
Bandron said anxiously.
I'm too young to die,
Jesden squealed. Calm down, gentlemen, Tyndall continued. There are no immediate plans to conscript you. We're merely preparing for the possibility, and hearing from yourselves how you think you would best serve your king and country is the place to start. If you don't think you'd make a good war mage, tell us why.
I'm going to need more parchment,
wailed Jesden. He passed out the sheaf of parchment and provided ink and quills to the students, then sat back and watched.
What are you watching for? Master Seekel whispered.
I have no idea,
Tyndall said confidently, his voice hushed, but the psychomantic grimoires I've read have stressed the importance of keen observation of human behaviour, since that's about what I'm left with. Master Seekel nodded, but as Tyndall sat and watched the boys struggle through their military assessment, his heart sank. If any of them were guilty of the crime, they were hiding it splendidly. One by one they blew their parchments dry, or used magic to dry them if they were skilled enough, and then put them in Tyndall's hand.
I don't want to die,
Jesden said, in a daze, as he handed in his short assessment. That's an outstanding attitude for a warrior to have, Tyndall nodded sagely, as he took the bookish boy's parchment.
I'm not afraid,
Caffin of Gaia said boldly, handing his in next.
I fear nothing.
That can also be an asset for certain missions, Tyndall admitted, not the kind of missions Tyndall liked. Bandron scowled as he turned his in.
Of a lucrative prospect as a resident adept, if the war doesn't get in the way, he said angrily.
No one has asked you to do anything but right, Master Seekel pointed out.
It's not that bad,
Darris of Holden's Mead said, trying to appear casual. But I'm not cut out for army life. My uncle was killed in the battles last year.
Torchwood? Torchmont? Someplace like that?
Timberwatch.
Tyndall corrected. I'm sorry. I was there.
Never liked my uncle much, shrugged Darris, handing Tyndall his sheet.
So, Master Seekel said as the last boy reluctantly turned in his paper and then filed out of the Enchanter's Hall.
That seemed a waste of time.
Not necessarily, Tyndall said as he rifled through the parchment scraps. If the thief is among them, then they saw me here acting as if nothing was wrong. Not acting in the panic I really want to indulge in right now. That has to be confusing. And if not,
yes.
Then think how happy the war magi at Raylan Kor will be that I got these self-assessments from the rising class at Inarion, he said, smiling weakly.
Yes, one never tires of the prospect of hearing of some bright young mind you've nurtured and instructed for years go off and get slaughtered,
the master said, sarcastically.
Any luck?
Tyndall asked hopefully when he returned to his room.
The thief did not leave the premises with the stone,
Rondell declared. Of that I am certain, and if he tries to move it away from here, I'll know about it, since I warded every possible travel route. Apart from that, I can't tell you anything.
What?
Tyndall asked, his eyes wide.
It's still here.
It hasn't been removed from within a mile, I should say, Rondell said, stretching out on his bed. So it's still close by, but shielded. It took all morning to figure out that much.
But if it's here, then, well, someone is hiding it.
Yes, when you cannot find something that someone took, he reasoned with exaggerated patience, it's usually because someone is hiding it. Damn clever of them, too.
All right, enough abuse, complained Tyndall. Of course they're going to hide it.
No,
Rondell interrupted.
I mean, they really were damn clever. Wherever they stashed it, it's hidden from simple scrying, and it's hidden from intensive scrying. In fact, I can't even find it in the other world. It's cloaked.
You can't? Tyndall asked, confused. But,
yes, I know,
sighed the other apprentice. More shadow magic. I hate shadow magic.
That stuff complicates everything.
You don't say,
Tyndall said dryly. You don't still think it was one of the students? Or one of the staff? I haven't ruled out anyone but you, and it wouldn't be fair to the others if I didn't consider you a suspect too. I've already got a Witchstone. Why would I want another? I didn't say you were a good suspect. I just said it wouldn't be fair,
Tyndall said, a little annoyed.
Am I interrupting?
Came an amused female voice from the door. Astasia. As much as he enjoyed her company, he was a bit annoyed she was there. He liked to present his best side to a girl, and that was hard to do when you were half mad with rage and magically crippled. But she was more than just a sympathetic ear. She was a good mage, a brilliant mage, by all accounts. She was helpful.
Just my slow descent into madness, groaned Tyndall. What do you want?
That's no way to treat a guest, Sir Tyndall, Rondell complained, quickly standing. Sire Kay would be ashamed. What can we help you with, my lady? He asked.
You have news?
She snorted at Tyndall's display.
I just thought you'd be interested to know that the remnants in the glass vial found in the courtyard were not, in fact, Bardane.
Ah, Tyndall said triumphantly, then you were wrong.
No, the comely alchemy student said patiently. There was plenty of Bardane in your vomit. That part I got exactly right. I just said that the residue in the glass in the yard wasn't Bardane, but it was even more intriguing.
It was Lanlinia.
What is Lanlinia?
Asked Rondal, sparing Tyndall the task.
It's a highly exotic, extremely rare herbal extract from some island somewhere, she said. I spent hours tracking it down. It's only mentioned a handful of times anywhere.
So what does it do? Tyndall asked.
Shadow magic? No. It makes you forget.
What? Tyndall asked, confused.
Like that. Exactly,
Astasia teased.
It makes you forget everything that has happened in the last 12 to 14 hours. Essentially, everything that you experienced from the time you woke up that morning, she explained.
But I remember everything about the theft, Tyndall protested. What kind of stupid herbal extract is that?
It's actually quite useful, hence the rare and exotic nature of the substance. But you're right. You do remember everything from that night. So it wasn't used on you.
Then who? Rondell frowned.
The thief used it on himself,
Astasia proclaimed, entering their room unbidden. It takes 15 or 20 minutes to take effect, but after that, you won't remember anything that happened after sunrise.
Why would a thief use it on himself? That's even more confusing, Tyndall said angrily.
He had a thick war wand in his hand he continuously smacked into his palm. The young woman watched with a mixture of horror and fascination.
Stop, slow down, relax,
Astasia said soothingly, closing her hand over his to still his wand.
You aren't thinking this through. It was actually very clever indeed.
Why is it clever to steal a witchstone and then forget where you put it?
I was perplexed about that myself, until I figured it out. The thief didn't take the potion to forget where they put it,
Astasia reasoned.
The thief took it so that he would forget he was a thief.
I... What? Rondell asked. Tyndall was gratified that he wasn't the only one confused. If his brainy fellow apprentice didn't follow the bewitching student's reasoning, he didn't feel so bad about his own failure.
Look at it from his perspective,
the pretty alchemist said, taking a seat on the one chair the boy shared.
You want to steal a witchstone, but you know, with absolute certainty, that the moment you do, you're going to be a suspect, possibly subjected to torture or execution if you're exposed. How do you steal the stone and then avoid revealing that you stole it under heavy questioning? How do you even avoid suspicion?
By not having a guilty conscience, Rondell said, finally understanding.
If you don't remember the crime, you can't feel guilty about it.
Exactly, she smiled. You're smarter than you look, she tossed at Rondell. The idiot beamed like a puppy who was patted on the head. Then she ignored him and spoke directly to Tyndall.
Let's go back over what we know about the crime. When the thief stole the Witchstone, they had to know where Tyndall was, when he would be alone in his room, and that he would not be disturbed long enough to complete the theft.
Then they had to poison me,
Tyndall reminded her.
Right,
she agreed, and that could have happened at any time yesterday. Bardane can take a few hours to work, but it works slower on some than others. So they had to keep watch on you, somehow, and then wait until it had taken effect enough to get you back to your room.
That wouldn't be too hard, reasoned Rondal, staring at the alchemist. He's not exactly subtle.
No, he is not, Estasia agreed, amused.
So someone was watching you. Did anyone seem to be following you around or watching you more than usual yesterday?
That's not exactly the kind of thing I keep track of, Tyndall said, annoyed. I may have an ego, but I'm not in love with myself that much.
Let's assume they watched you from afar. They saw you head back to your room. They had to know that you would not be joined. What were you doing when he was being robbed?
She asked Rondal suddenly.
Me?
He asked, surprised. I was in the scriptorium, copying a scroll on thaumaturgy.
Why? Who was with you?
No one, Rondal said. His lips pursed. There were other people there, but no one was really with me.
So you could have been watched,
she nodded. But not by the same person who was watching Tyndall, I expect. Not if they had to know where both of you were at the same time.
He had to be alone. He had to be in his room. He had to be drugged. They had to have a means of getting into his room without being spotted. Once those conditions were met, all he had to do was scale the roof, cast his shadow magic spells to conceal his identity, paralyze Tyndall with the wand, take the stone, escape through the window, and then down a rope or something into the courtyard. So whoever it was is good with heights.
Not really the sort of thing you can test for, Rondal mumbled. But they were also canny enough to plan this thing and then have the resources to do it.
They had talent, she recited as she paced the scene of the crime. They had some education, so that leaves out the first-year students, perhaps the second years. And they weren't idiots.
They were good enough to realize you had put a trace on the gloves, she reasoned, so they abandoned them.
Wouldn't they have hidden the stone near to where they dropped the gloves? Asked Rondal.
Nowhere near where they hid the stone, Tyndall said, shaking his head.
You're right, she nodded. They would not have taken the chance. So they hid the stone first, abandoned the empty wand, marked gloves and incriminating cloak, wandered away, and then they took the potion. They were gone by the time you two arrived in the courtyard.
That means they only had 15 minutes to stash the stone, somewhere, and get back to wherever he was supposed to be, in time to forget everything and not end up wandering around the campus aimlessly.
That would arouse suspicion, agreed Rondal. So where could they have hidden the stone?
Pretty much anywhere, admitted Estasia, and there are a dozen different entrances to the various towers, as well as balconies and such. Whoever this thief is, he's nimble. They could have easily gotten back inside without notice, or hidden in one of the outbuildings.
So that helps us not at all, groaned Tyndall.
No, Rondal said evenly. It actually tells us quite a bit about our thief. Look at the specialized equipment he had. That wand isn't something you can buy at the student canteen, and those gloves are lightly enchanted too for grip, and they're specially made, far beyond the scope of a student. Someone else would have to provide them.
So he was unlikely to be working alone if he was a student, Tyndall said, nodding.
It made sense.
He wasn't poor, or his backer wasn't, and he was smart and sophisticated enough to anticipate us using some psychomantic method of avoiding even a truth-telling. If you don't remember doing something, you can't lie about it.
So he has knowledge of shadow magic, alchemy, herbalism, and war magic. The paralysis spell, remember?
That was a wand of undetermined origins, Tyndall reminded her, and not, strictly speaking, a war magic spell. It does have other uses, unless you learned its origins, he added hopefully.
No, she said sadly. I examined it with Master Indan. It was a basic one-use spell. Whoever did it didn't leave enough of a trace to get a signature.
Professional.
But that still indicates a lot of resources.
Consider how much such a thing must cost if they didn't make it. Add that to this expensive forgetting potion, and the expensive sedative that lured me to sleep, and the enchanted cloak that must have taken someone a year to make. That is someone who has a lot of coin in their purse. But yeah,
I guess this thief has a clever brain, too. Or his partner does.
That's actually likely. I doubt any of the boys here would have the skills, much less the brains, to undertake such an enterprise on their own.
I beg to differ, m'lady, Rondell said, shaking his head. There are some of the smartest.
Smart, she interrupted, but unsophisticated. If you were a half-trained student mage, would you consider trying to imperil your future, not to mention your life, by daring to steal the Witchstone of one of the first and greatest knights magi?
I am a half-trained student mage, Rondell countered a little sourly, and no, I wouldn't try to steal a Witchstone, unless I knew what it was really capable of.
Now, of course.
Hey, you think I'm great? Tyndall asked, confused. That was unexpected, and welcome. He made note of the interest, as the laws of love suggested he do.
Enough other people do so that you have that reputation, Astasia said coolly.
It's what people believe, not what actually is, that matters in a case like this.
Ouch,
Rondell said, wincing on his fellow apprentice's behalf. Tyndall ignored the jab. He knew she liked him.
She's right,
Tyndall sighed. On parchment, I'm not a guy you'd want to mess with unless you were very good.
On parchment,
conceded Rondell, but there was a lot of forethought here. Someone had to give you the Bardane. Someone had to watch where you went. Someone had to prepare to rob you. And it's possible, if not likely, that the thief handed off the prize to the Confederate before taking the Lanlinier, or stashed it along the way.
That would save a lot of time, agreed Tyndall.
If the thief didn't have to worry about holding the stone, then they'd have ample time to get back to wherever they were supposed to be.
Have we accounted for everyone's whereabouts? Asked Astasia.
Close enough, reported Rondell. The headmaster spoke casually to each boy and got his alibi without him realizing it. Almost all of them were studying or doing their assigned chores, and the ones who weren't had witnesses.
That's annoying, Tyndall said disgustedly.
That doesn't mean that we can rule them all out, though, Rondell reminded him. With the thief not remembering committing the crime, he could have been lying, truthfully, when he spoke with the headmaster.
And the Confederate doesn't have to be another boy, either, observed Tyndall, his eyes opening a little wider.
It could be anyone. Involuntarily, his eyes flicked to Astasia.
Hey, she protested. I was in front of witnesses when I heard the commotion, and I'm the one who agreed to test the vial, she pointed out. I even consented to have my work double-checked by Mistress Quentin.
Flawless, she added casually. That could just mean you're cleverer than you look, Tyndall said helpfully.
Hey!
Astasia protested again. If I wanted your stupid stone, I'm sure I would have had other ways to get it than to climb through your window.
Is that a flirtation, m'lady?
Tyndall asked. Astasia's face darkened. That's enough, you two, Rondell said, disgusted. Let's save our energies for the problem at hand. We're going to need them. Every moment we waste puts that stone further out of reach.
Agreed,
Tyndall said. Then he thought of something.
Astasia, just why are you helping us?
What do you mean? She asked suspiciously. I mean, why devote your time to this, when you're just making yourself a bigger suspect by your interest? He expected an outburst, but instead got a curt nod.
I can see your point.
All right. Let's just say that I've been here 2 years now and I'm bored to tears. Tracking down a lost...
Stolen,
Tyndall reminded her.
Stolen, Witchstone, is actually a practical challenge. A lot different than slashing my way through theory or working in tubes and jars in a laboratory.
Besides, she said, her blush returning, I know the political tides are turning, and it's raising both of your ships. I figure if you knew my name and my face, it might prove beneficial in the future.
We've been hounded for less reason, Tyndall said.
Back in Castabriel, during the coronation, there were these...
Every moment we waste,
Rondell reminded them sharply. I'm going to assume Astasia isn't either of our criminals because... Well, because I just do, and she's proven an asset in the search, he said hurriedly. Besides... If she is one of them, then being close to her will help trip her up and reveal herself.
Oh, thank you, Sir Knight,
the alchemist said, curtsying sarcastically. To continue,
We have to find out two things, who the thief is and where the Witchstone is. The thief can lead us to the Confederate, I hope, and the Confederate can lead us to the Witchstone. So let us find the thief.
Yes, let's. Tyndall grumbled. Only we've been searching for hours, and we have little sign on the trail. Where do we go from here?
There was a pregnant silence in the tower chamber as the three thought furiously. It stretched and stretched, long beyond the point of comfortability. Several times the glimmer of an idea would almost compel someone to speak, but as time wound on, nothing sprang to mind.
I'm beat, Tyndall finally admitted. I feel lost without my stone, but my body just can't keep my mind thinking anymore.
We've been up for 30 hours or more, agreed Rondell with a yawn. If we're going to think properly, we're going to need to rest. I'll set the wards, he offered. Astasia smiled apologetically.
I was hoping I could think of something, but not without alerting everyone to the theft. Maybe I'll dream up something tonight.
I'd offer to help, Tyndall teased, but I'm just not up to it.
I don't need your help, she assured. Just get some sleep. We'll think of something. And
if we don't, finished Rondell, I'm going to have to call on our master, and I don't think anyone wants that to happen.
The question becomes, Rondell said as they walked to lunch, how do we flush out this thief when he has no memory of stealing?
He couldn't have been an unwilling dupe,
pointed out Tyndall, who had been disappointed the dawn had brought no further insight into his problem. He had to have known enough magic and had enough ambition to make the attempt.
Or he was coerced into it, Rondell observed. His help could have been extorted.
I don't think he was, Tyndall said. No good reason. I don't know. He seemed kind of eager, and he was definitely triumphant when he left.
You got that with him in the dark, paralyzed in a mask, cloaked by shadow magic.
I can be a pretty subtle guy, Tyndall bragged.
All right. Assume he was a willing accomplice, conceded Rondell. Why would you take that kind of risk and then just forget about it?
Apart from the obvious advantages, you wouldn't. Maybe that drug's effect was meant to be temporary. Maybe the accomplice will alert the thief to what he did after the fact. Would you? Asked Rondell.
No, admitted Tyndall. Assuming I'm a murderous cutthroat who wanted a witchstone, no. I'd never let the idiot I got to steal it for me remember if I'd gone to all the trouble to make him forget.
Exactly,
sighed Rondell, as they passed by a work crew hauling the cart that emptied the garderobes and chamber pots. It was not one of the better student jobs, and usually given out as a severe punishment. To their surprise, Stanol of Arquin and Caffin of Gaia, his sparring comrades from the yard, were the ones pushing the cart.
Triggs, holy cramps, who did you piss off? Asked Tyndall,
partially amused by and partially sympathetic to the boy's plight.
Mistress Selverdine didn't like a comment I made about a classmate, Stanol said, blushing. She thought some time pushing the honey cart might make me more respectful.
Must have been some comment, whistled Rondell. And you?
I failed an exam, Caffin said miserably. Thaumaturgic theory. Utterly failed it. I got 1 question out of 30 correct. It was like it just went in my eyes and leaked back out again.
He shook his head. So I get to do this, instead of studying. Master Seacole reamed me out. Verbally, he clarified, and then decided I wasn't taking my studies seriously enough. This experience is supposed to help focus my attention. He made a face.
Ouch, Tyndall winced.
I'm suddenly terribly glad I'm an apprentice and not a student.
You should be,
Stanol nodded.
See you at the yard later.
I'm working on a special project, Tyndall said reluctantly. I might not be there.
Stanol looked disappointed.
Damn, you're the only one around here who can challenge me, apart from the guards.
And Cav.
Challenge you? I kick your ass 3 times out of 4,
the son of a sea knight boasted. Caffin was the better swordsman of the two, Tyndall had to admit, but he could never say so.
I don't think either one of you should be bragging much, Tyndall confided quietly. You're both decent fighters, but, well, you need seasoning. It's clear you've never fought for your life. Really, fought for your life before.
Stanol looked pale. I'd rather not if I could help it. I just like swordplay. And I've never fought for my life,
Caffin pointed out. But when I do, I want to know what I'm doing.
Then keep practicing, assured Tyndall. Besides, with a war on, you never know when knowing how to fight will come in handy. And you're more fun to bait up than Rundle here.
The boys both made faces, but they nodded and pushed on, their cart sloshing evilly as they moved it.
Guts, I'd rather suffer one of Master Min's lectures, Tyndall said, shaking his head as the stinking cart rolled by.
With Garkey, I only had one chamber pot to empty, agreed Rundle, and a junior apprentice to delegate that too. I'm starting to see the advantages of our situation, he admitted.
Just then a door opened, allowing 6 or 7 female students to stream out toward the dining hall afternoon service in the chapel, carefully avoiding Caffin and Stannell's wagon as it lurched across the campus. The boys stopped and allowed them to go ahead of them.
On the other hand, there are some unique advantages to student life too, Rundle observed, watching the giggling mass of young femininity pass by, leaving a perfumed cloud in their wake.
I see your point, Tyndall said,
then shook his head to clear his mind. And here I thought you were considering celibate holy orders.
Look, I am a little shy, Rundle said, annoyed.
That doesn't mean I'm uninterested. When Ishii decides the time is right. If you wait around for divine intervention to find you a woman, snorted Tyndall, you're wasting your time. Ishii doesn't tie our hearts together just because she fancies it. You have to go out there and make yourself vulnerable with a girl, he counseled. Really connect with her.
I thought I was doing that with Astasia, his fellow apprentice said through clenched teeth, but she seems strangely distracted.
Let's get back to my problem, Tyndall said quietly, realizing he was getting distracted.
2 accomplices, and they haven't left the area with it yet. How do we draw them out?
They've got what they want, grumbled Tyndall. All they have to do is not get caught.
If Master Minolin comes here to search, they're not going to get away with it. They have to realize that.
They need to not get away with it before he comes, Tyndall complained.
I can't believe I lost my stone.
Hey! Called a familiar female voice from the line to the dining hall ahead.
You 2 mage knights!
Astasia broke through the crowd, a book in her hand. Her mantle was thrown back, and her shapely form distracted him pleasantly for a moment.
I think I have the answer.
Answer to what? Rundle asked.
The answer to the question of which the 2 of you is the dimmer, she said sarcastically. But what I really have the answer to is your problem.
You do?
Tyndall asked skeptically.
Believe it or not, I do, she said excitedly.
Do you have a moment?
Rundle looked at the large line in front of the dining hall and how slowly it moved.
It appears we have several, he nodded.
What do you have?
Before I show you, she said, biting her lip, let me tell you how I arrived at the solution. Firstly, why can't you scry for the stone?
Because someone is cloaking it, Tyndall answered.
Rundle nodded.
Exactly, the alchemist nodded eagerly.
So, what would you see if you looked for it? Nothing,
Rundle said, confused.
Why?
So, what happens if you light up the area with magic? She asked.
Like, imagine if we made it rain. Rain magic.
All right, agreed Tyndall slowly. It's raining magic. Now what?
If it is indeed raining magic, that is, we cast spells or sigils or whatever all over the campus, we should be able to scry out pretty much everything.
Except for the places that are cloaked,
Rundle agreed, excitedly.
Oh, sweet briggers! Bum, that's brilliant! That's what we did when we were looking for that tree in Alsha, remember, Tin? We look for what isn't there, not what is.
That might work, conceded Tyndall, who was hardening his heart against the idea that he'd lost his stone.
It will work, she declared. I'm so sure. I even looked up the right spell for it, she said, shoving her book under their noses.
It's a little obscure, and about as useless as nipples on a man, she giggled. But I found it.
The boys both read the spell, a mere 3 or 4 pages worth. It was surprisingly simple if one had the power for it. A mage, it declared, could fill a space 1/2 a rod in diameter with low-level power, should he need to, with the spell.
We can't search this place 1/2 rod at a time, Tyndall said, discouraged.
We don't have to, corrected Astasia. With Rundle's stone,
He would have the power so that he could conceivably fill every part of the campus at once. Then one of us does the scrying while he's working, and my stone shows up because of what's not there, Tyndall concluded. All right, what do we need? Some time, some quiet space, and, well, a map of campus. We can find all of that in the Manciples Library after closing hour, Tyndall suggested. Tonight's after classes, then, Rondell decided. Meet us up there. How long will it take to cast the spell? For me, 3 or 4 hours. For you, unknown, she conceded. But it takes about an hour to fade into effect, and then it only lasts about 15 minutes. That doesn't give us very much time, Tyndall frowned. That gives us plenty of time, if we're prepared, pointed out Astasia. I'll scry while Rondell does the summoning. You can mark spots on the map as we encounter them, and then we'll find my stone, and punish whoever took it, Tyndall said resolutely. One step at a time, Sir Knight, she said, amused. Where do we cast it? The library? Or check out a student laboratory? We can do the spell in our room, Rondell said flatly. We don't need all the symbolic stuff for this, he decided as he studied the spell. The essence of the work is pretty straightforward. You want to do high-level magic in your bedroom? She asked, scandalized. That's where I do my best work, quipped Tyndall smugly. But we should do it in the Manciples Library. Believe me, no one will disturb us there. It sounds like an intriguing place, Astasia said, an eyebrow arching. We should study together there sometime, Tyndall said with a smirk. We could... Oh, shut up, Rondell moaned. Yes, she likes you. You like her. You're going to get married and have 20 fat babies and live in a pretty little castle surrounded by happy peasants. But let's do this now. If I have to keep hearing him whine about his stone... Not now, pleaded Tyndall. As much as I want my stone back, I want food more. I haven't eaten in forever. And I vomited, don't forget. I really wish I could, Rondell said mildly. We can do it this evening, assuming the thief doesn't try to get away. And ancient Galdon is inspecting everyone and everything leaving the campus. What do we need, then? Tyndall asked, ignoring Rondell. He knew he'd been complaining about the theft. He wondered how Rondell would have reacted to it. It's fairly straightforward, she said, referring to the text. From the Silomancian scrolls on Thaumaturgy. The good news is that this spell can carry another, and I think I have just the spell to restore the criminal's memory, too, while we're at it. But that will take yet more time to build yet more power. No, it won't, Rondell said, digging out his own shard of Irionite. I can build a couple of apices and feed the power to you two. You can do the inauguration, Lady Astasia, and Tyndall can do the scrying, which takes far less power. Then at the end you can do the memory restoration. That could work, agreed Tyndall, a little more annoyed with his competent rival. But it means we're going to be intimate. I know, Rondell swallowed. They'd only combined their efforts in the traditional imperial manner during instruction, never for any real work. Irionite gave them plenty of power, reducing the need for such techniques. It made them both uncomfortable. Being pressed up, mind to mind, with someone, put you very close to them. I'm game, Astasia said, giggling. I've done very little group work like that. Alchemy rarely requires that sort of work. I'd love to try, though, and I don't mind being intimate, she added softly.